Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Only Podcast. I am your co-host, Austin Smith, joined as always by your other co-host, John Kirby. Today is Tuesday, October 12th, and John, it's halfway through the season, and last I checked, looking at my watch right now, Michigan State yet to lose a game in the world of football. How does that make you feel?
I think it's cool that your watch tells you Michigan State's record.
Well, yeah, you talk to Mel, he'll get you one.
But also, I think it's awesome that from here on out, six wins for a lot of people was kind of the goal. It's all gravy, baby, from here on out for some. And for others, expectations have grown immensely, and maybe rightfully so.
Yeah, I mean, I think we find ourselves on maybe slightly opposite sides of this exact issue here. So I don't know. Do we want to save that? Do we want to talk about our favorite son first before we get into football?
You know, the football team is making a good push to be the favorite son.
Okay, fine.
Let's do hoops. You know, they're not there yet.
We don't want to let them get fat and sassy, to steal a term from our good friend Tom. So the Big Ten media preseason poll came out for basketball. Michigan State, not too much lower than the position that they are, or not too much higher, I should say, than their current football AP rank position. They came in at number 6 in the conference with 262 total points or votes or whatever, kind of squarely in the top, half here. Maryland was ranked 5th at 269. So MSU very close there. Indiana with 219 total votes was kind of the next little chunk down. So MSU clearly seen as that, top 6 squad. The rest of the poll, Michigan and Purdue tied. Michigan technically the number one team with 373 points and 13 first place votes. Purdue 373 points with 12 first place votes. So Michigan edging them out by just one. Illinois with 320 and 3 first place votes, and then Ohio State and Maryland bringing up the 4 and 5 spot. If you go by those vote counters, you're kind of breaking things down. It kind of looks like the top 4 of Michigan, yeah. Purdue, Illinois, Ohio State, and then it's sort of Maryland, MSU in their own little tier, and then it's Indiana, Rutgers, and then nobody else is getting any love at all after that. Mm-hmm. So it's looking like a pretty top heavy conference, but not as top heavy as we've seen in the past where there's just one or two teams. It seems like there's a decent amount of high expectations from the Big Ten per usual.
Yeah. I mean, everyone asks, is this the year the Big Ten can get a natty? I don't know. Maybe there are a handful of definite contenders, and the reason is because of front court play. Incredible front courts in the Big Ten this year. We talk about Illinois has the player of the year preseason vote in Kofi Coburn. That's probably a no-doubter for a lot of folks. Hunter Dickinson got 3 votes for player of the year. Trace Jackson Davis, 3 votes. Travion Williams, 2 votes. EJ Liddell, 4 votes. So I think a lot of people think guards win natties, though. So I'm not sure if this is the year. But I will say that the first team preseason of Kofi Coburn, EJ Liddell, Hunter Dickinson, Trace Jackson Davis, and Jaden Ivey of Purdue guard is, I think if Michigan State wants to look at that and be like, damn, that is tough sledding for a lot of the games in the Big Ten schedule. If there's one strength on this team, it's front court depth. And Michigan State is ready and weathered to take on the top tier of the Big Ten because of that 3-man center rotation. So yeah, MSU is in that 6th spot, which is probably exactly right. Maybe, you could make an argument maybe for 5th, but that feels exactly right to me. But you got to feel okay when you look up and who's above them and say, why are they getting so much love? And then you say, okay, can MSU hang with that? And I think the answer might be definitively yes. So
yeah, it's pretty fun. Yeah, I would say, like, in terms of just looking at roster construction, the worries with Michigan State are not in the front court. The worries are in the back court, same place they were last year. And as you said, that's really where a lot of the strengths lie amongst the entire Big Ten, especially that upper echelon. I mean, I don't know which one of those backcourts is really the best. I don't know that any of them are necessarily like knockdown, drag out, great backcourts. So when you consider that, you know, there's so much unknown in those top five, if Tyson Walker is able to come in and be effective, if A.J. Hogarth takes a step up, it's not difficult to see MSU going up this list of and finishing higher than sixth. Mm-hmm. Because they should be able to hang in the front court for the most part every night. And I don't think that every team, especially the ones from seven down, can really say that. So I will say first team, extremely Big Ten of them to have three centers on there. Love that.
And a
power forward. It also speaks to the quality that Trevion Williams is not on the first team. Because that's incredible, because there's no reason he couldn't be the player of the year. Honestly, this probably would have gotten my vote when I get my vote. I will place it for him. He's incredible. And Purdue is every bit a team that could win the Big Ten. So it's going to be another really deep year. I kind of think, to your point, I don't know if this is I need to learn more about the other teams around the country, but your assessment of great guards win tournaments is as true as ever. I firmly am in that camp of belief, and that's what kind of makes me wary about this Big Ten team once they hit the tournament once again. You know, if it's all front court, you're going to do pretty well against a lot of teams, but you go up against that one hot guard who runs the show the way that other people can't really contain, and things can end quickly for a lot of these teams. But that being said, I think MSU's in the perfect spot. We'll dive more into these teams here in a few weeks, but probably, I'm not disappointed or surprised at this point.
One other shout out is freshman of the year. The runaway was Caleb Houston of Michigan, but also receiving votes and second most votes was Max Christie with 8. And Max's contributions are going to be paramount to this team's success. Fortunately, that's a lot to ask of a freshman, but you know, at the same time, certainly capable of it, you hope. So
yeah, I mean, he is going to be, I would argue he's more important to his team than Houston will be to Michigan. I think Michigan's got with Dickinson and his experience, you know, he's had the team run through him in the past. I think they'll be okay whether Houston is just, you know, if he's not this dynamite, you know, freshman, I don't mean this as like a disparaging thing, because he, for, you know, by all stretches, looks like a one and done type, really, really good player. But I don't think he needs to be for Michigan to be like a really good team. However, he does need to be for them to be an elite team, which is where they're getting ranked. Right. I think that Max Christie needs to be good for MSU to overachieve. I don't know that Houston is going to be as widely. His contributions aren't as desperately needed.
You're probably right, because if things somehow go sideways, they still have Brandon Johns Jr., who is capable of Big Ten player. You know, like they're okay. Whereas you look at MSU's roster and Max Christie is the starting number two without a doubt. And if he's not up to par, there's not a lot of places to look. So, so anyway, like we said, we'll have a huge preseason podcast on this before the season starts, as we always do. But we can't forget about our favorite son, you know.
No, of course not. But as you said, the gap is closing.
It's closing.
There's no question. There's no question about that. Every single week it gets a little closer. Last week, MSU kind of taking care of business and finding new spectacular ways to make this Cinderella story, if you want to call it that, an even better one. Going on the road, winning a game that kind of at the beginning had some weird feels to it. They ended up beating Rutgers 31-13, and that was after going down 7-0 in this game. So a nice little run there to close it out. Some incredible performances in this one. Like the numbers pop off the page at you, especially obviously offensively. Peyton Thorne going 340 yards, 3 touchdowns, 1 interception. Kenneth Walker III doing what he does, 232 yards on the ground and a touchdown, including a 94-yard touchdown run. And Jalen Naylor, 5 catches, 221, and 3 touchdowns. Very close to a Randy Moss performance, just too many catches. just remarkable stuff all around. Defense came to play too, 4 sacks, 7.5 tackles for loss. But really the story of this one was there was some good and then there was some bad. Let's start with the good, John. It seems like MSU's skill positions, which we talked about before the year even started, it's as good as it gets right now.
So I'm going to say something that is going to come off as extremely homerish, and it is. But at the same time, I would challenge someone to go find me a better four skill players than Peyton Thorne at quarterback, Kenneth Walker at running back, Jaden Reed, and Jalen Naylor at wide receiver in the country. And I bet you could say Ohio State gets to raise their hand and say,
yeah, that's where I was going to start.
So, okay, there's one team that gets to raise their hand. Who else gets to raise their hand?
I think Bama would probably have something to say about it.
So listen to the teams we just said.
Oh, no. Your point's well taken.
And I think I want to contrast what I just said with the past 3 years of Michigan State's offense.
Oh, what's going on here? Can you hear that? Sorry, I had ESPN up and running. My fault. Go ahead.
Well, what I was going to say was, considering we were looking for below average, literally below average offense, upgrading from miserable offense to below average, and now 6 games into the season, we're talking about an offense who can put their hand up and say, we have players that are performing at the level of Alabama and Ohio State's offense. And no one in the country could say that's not necessarily true, because it is. It's Kenneth Walker's leading the country in rushing yards. Jaden Reed and Jalen Naylor are taking turns on having incredible season. Like, if Jalen Naylor had a season the way he had this last game, some wide receivers in the country would be happy with that. I'm serious. 3 touchdowns.
I believe that. I totally agree with you.
292 yard. Like, you're not an elite wide receiver, but that's okay.
It's a contribution.
It is incredible. And I think for me, the hardest thing is just remembering how bad it was. And I think the only reason I'm hammering on how bad it was, because I know everyone wants to forget that, get that bad taste out of your mouth, is because it's happened so fast. We skipped a year of the rebuild. We skipped it altogether. We went from year 0 to year 2 overnight. And I don't know how to handle it. It's wild.
It is wild. I think it's, again, we've just been handing out accolades and props to coaches all year. But I think one guy who we've kind of not talked a lot about, because frankly, his performance last year, the performance of his unit last year was so lackluster, is Jay Johnson. I mean, it's not like these guys are, you know, just out there drawing stuff up in the dirt and making it happen. They are playing a scheme that's looked just remarkably effective. What Jay Johnson's done by the one thing that I love about his offense is that it gives you 5 or 6 different looks off of the same plays and motions. So he's got all of these different things built into the same, you know, you'll see Jaden Reed go in motion all the time, Jalen Naylor go in motion all the time. But on those plays, it could be anybody that's actually the one making the play. Whether it's a run up the middle to Walker or something to the outside, one of the passes to any of the wide receivers. It's pretty impressive. So Jay Johnson deserves a ton of credit for putting this offense together. It is incredible. I think it also goes to show that the nutrition and development program is, and the offseason work of Jason Novak is incredible. These guys look different out there. They're able to have that breakaway speed. They're playing like this deep into the fourth quarter. All in all, it's pretty insane. I don't think we talk, even though Kenneth Walker is so good, I don't think we talk enough about just how good he is.
We don't.
Because it's insane.
He had a 94-yard house call That was a team touchdown, by the way. I mean, the offensive line blocking in there was incredible. Connor Hayward started it all, and we'll get zero credit, but I'm going to call him out. He hits the backside block that springs the hole, and you had guys on the offensive line hit the second level. And then even better, you had Jaden Reed, who didn't have statistically the type of game you expect from him, blocking about 25 or 30 yards downfield. And Kenneth Walker breaking tackles 30 yards downfield, and then setting a MSU record for longest touchdown from play of scrimmage with 94 yards. Also another school record, most handshake high fives in a play, where Jalen Naylor and Kenneth Walker did that task at around the 10-yard line. And if that's not a Heisman moment, I'm not sure what is. And also, I want to go on record, if you high five, shake hands with a teammate during a play and score, you should get double the points.
I think I completely agree with you. At least double the points. And B, I think that's an automatic invite to New York. Mm-hmm. I think if you're able to pull that off. One thing you made a point about Jaden Reed and the fact that he's out there blocking and making these plays downfield despite leading the nation in all-purpose yardage coming into that game, by the way. Yep. I think it speaks to just how bought in everybody is. No block, no rock. I've heard them say that before. I love that. And I think it also speaks like the fact Naylor has been able to go off these last 2 weeks, you know, obviously credit to him. He's a very talented player, but I think it shows what a decoy Jaden Reed can be. I mean, he is an elite level, but when you have one guy that you have to prepare for like that, that's something that's on. And then you also have Kenneth Walker on top of that. And you have, you know, it's going to give Speedy the chance to make some things happen on his own. And I think you saw him cash in on it several different times and in all on kind of different routes too. So it was, again, when you have things that you can play off of and Jay Johnson's and a quarterback back there and Peyton Thorne, who isn't making dumb mistakes. He's been so that's another thing. It's like we talked about at the beginning of the year. You know, if he's won the job, it would mean he won the job. Like he was the better choice. And I think it's obvious that he was, if he's been playing like this all of spring and summer, like no wonder he won the job. He's been pretty remarkable.
So there was one other good thing, and we'll split to what has to get better. Things were still in doubt a little bit. And when MSU turned the ball over, fumbling twice on the same play, which was tough. It happens, I suppose. You don't like to see a quarterback fumble and then your offensive line pick it up and then fumble.
But then, yeah, I kind of feel like Luke Campbell, by the way. Just, I'm sorry, you're a sixth-year offensive lineman. Just fall on the ball, man. Just fall on the ball. That's it. I was screaming at my television when that happened.
That was tough. And you'd like to think that doesn't happen again, you hope. And so then MSU's defense put in a really tough spot on their own 23 and holds Rutgers to a field goal, which felt big. And I don't want to say that's the thing that won the game. What won the game was Michigan State's explosive plays. But when you know this defense has had a lot of question marks about them. And I'm not sure if we got them all answered, but I think there are specific pieces that you can look at like that one and you can say, okay, it's not all there, but it's not terrible. Like this offense won't have to win every game for you moving forward. You know, maybe there's more there than meets the eye. So I thought that was interesting. But
you made a good point about the defense before we jumped on, and it's that what was it? They're like 124th in the nation in pass defense, passing yardage, or something like that. But they lead the conference in sacks or something crazy like that. I think it speaks to just how good that defensive front is. I think what that tells me is that, you know, kind of reading between the lines and just based on what we've watched, like they are the only way to get yardage on this defense is to do it quickly. And that is to get the ball out 1, 2, 3 steps, because MSU's defense is kind of designed with giving up that bend but don't break-ness. And having that sort of built into the way that they work. Like they'll give you the quick stuff to the outside, knowing that once you get down inside of the red zone, like Rutgers did a few times, you're not going to be able to do those things anymore. Those windows won't be there. And they're banking on talent and scheme to take those things away. I mean, they have two safeties that can cover a ton of ground. They're two leading tacklers, Henderson and Gross, that are more than equipped to make those plays in the red zone. And I think that defensive front is the real deal. One thing I will say is they definitely missed Cal Halliday in the first half, though. And that linebacking depth, you could tell not everybody's kind of running around with their hair on fire. Credit to Mark D'Antonio for identifying a guy like Cal Halliday who would be, and for Tucker and his staff for seeing that this is kind of your quarterback. And yeah, maybe not the most athletic dude in the world, but he's going to get people in the right place and make the right plays. And that's as valuable as anything. But once he was back in the game, you really saw things start to calm down there a little bit. And yeah, I agree with you. The defense cornerbacks are still worrisome, far from a finished product, but that defensive front is really, really, really good. I mean, they have five defensive tackles that are legitimately plus players. Mm-hmm. And that includes Deshaun Mallory, who has barely played this year and came back and made some serious flash plays this week.
So Michigan State's not only leading the conference in sacks, but is tied for fifth in the nation with 22, tied with Georgia.
That's crazy.
Georgia defense. The same Georgia defense that's allowing 5.5 points a game. So
heard of them.
So, you know, it's just this defense is so confusing. We'll talk about them a little bit more because we think that there's going to be a come to Jesus moment very soon, or we'll actually know what's going on. But, you know, to wrap, you beat a not bad team. They're bad, but not awful. Beat a bad team, and you made it harder than maybe it needed to be. At the beginning, the critical clock management errors, that was rough to watch. The delay of game penalties can't happen. You're playing at Rutgers, not at the Horseshoe, okay? And then you have, you know, defense needing to call timeouts in the first half. That's to your point about Cal Halliday not being out there. It got a little messy. And then the missed field goal that was blocked at the end of the half kind of make you shake your head, and you're like, okay, you can beat teams like Rutgers doing this, but it's game six. That's still, like, I get that it's year two of this team, and they're still growing. And yes, they skipped a whole year of the rebuild. You play teams better than Rutgers on the schedule, that stuff's just not going to work. Like, you're not going to win games. There's just the margin for error gets smaller and smaller against teams better than Rutgers. And you got to clean it up. The fake field goal. Like, what are we doing? You know, and I don't know. Yeah. You don't have to do dumb. Like, it's just the good news is very easily correctable. You hope.
Yeah. I mean, that's the first half was very same old Spartans. Like, it had some upsettingly John L. vibes to it. Like, no question. I wouldn't disagree with that one bit. I think that's on everybody. To be honest, Mel's got to be ready to call that timeout at the end of the half, even though they got that second back. Thorne's got to be smarter than that to go up to the line and change protection. Like, he's just got to get that ball off, make a play, even if it's thrown away. And if you're going to throw it away, don't throw it to the farthest part of the field. Like, there was a lot of sloppiness, I agree, to the early part of that game. But, you know, there is something to the fact that it's kind of nice that they didn't play a perfect game. Don't use your perfect games now. have things to clean up because, yeah, you went and won this game by 18 on the road. It's great. You're 6-0. You're bowl eligible. You're accomplishing a lot of your goals, keeping things in front of you. But, you know, at the same point in time, you need to have things where coaches can get on these players about. And there's plenty to come away with this. There's headlines, but there's also things that they need to be able to clean up if they want to win games that it feels like they might be able to win.
Yeah, it's great. You know, Spin Zone, it's great news. You won by 18 on the road in a game you should have won. And there's so many correctable things. Like, yes. And that's great. And here's where it gets really wild. MSU is legitimately, not just two homers on a podcast, legitimately in the national playoff conversation halfway through the season. I can't, like, wrap my head around that. What you are watching is a glow up at the speed of light.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. Like I, you know, again, I think I was the optimist in the room when it came to this season, and I was sitting saying, you know, hey, I think this team can win 7 games. Well, guess what? It's about to be week 7, and they might accomplish that feat. And they are. I mean, I've seen people pick them, deliberately pick them over the likes of Ohio State, Penn State, and Michigan when it comes to who is going to make the college football playoff. And it's, I think it's insane, but it's also like, if you just look at the sheer kind of, if you just follow the numbers, it's not this outrageous sentiment. Like I think there's a long ways to go. And the beauty of it is MSU gets to prove it one way or the other, right? Because they get to play, you know, all of those teams from Big Ten, with the exception of Iowa, that are in this same discussion.
It's just insane. Yeah, to remind everyone, the Vegas over and under was 4.5.
Already cashed. I told you all to hammer that.
I know, but it's just like 4.5 wins, playoff conversation. The gap between those two things is
pretty significant.
And so I'm just overwhelmed with how fast this team has improved. It's quite crazy. Quick notes before we move on. You saw Matt Coughlin struggle a little bit, but he did move to the all-time leader with 72 field goals made. So congratulations to him, and is now 5th all-time with extra points. You want to see him get into a groove, though, because it's going to get pretty hairy, and you're going to need those. So
big time
butt cheeks during those times, folks.
Yeah, I would say, honestly, if there's one worry I have about this team, aside from just, hey, you're going to have to play some really good teams, it's that they've done such a good job of winning like the little intangible parts of the game, except for that. He has not been very good this year. And it's not like he's missing these long field goals. These are 35 yarders that he's chunking. So I'm glad he's accomplishing all these records. It's great, but I would personally rather have the made field goals.
Hey, big opportunities coming up.
Big time.
So Austin, 6-0 bowling, incredible. Halfway to go. Some would argue 40% of the way there. 15 games. Mm-hmm. Crazy. What? And not me, but people are talking.
Some.
People are saying. So do you think we should take a commercial break and then hit the national and Big Ten results?
I think that's what we should do, John. I think that's exactly what we should do. All right, here we go. 3, 2, 1. Then we're back. John.
Yep.
I have a question for you.
Hit me.
Do you want Bama?
No. No. Hell no.
I just want to remind people, listen, they did lose. It's true. They lost. But let's not get too big for our britches here. The fact remains that you still never want Bama.
Never. Everyone needs
credit to Texas A&M, though, because they apparently.
What happened? Your boy, QB2, Calzada, he won the game.
Unbelievable. And I think he did it like while breaking his ankle on a hit, too. Like, I thought he was toast. The last touchdown pass he threw, I was like, oh, he just shattered his femur. And yet he completed just a beauty of a touchdown pass down the field. And they were down, too. Like, credit to A&M for still fighting, man. They had every reason to give up on that one. I mean, it's Bama. Like, you had every reason to be like, well, this is they've scored. They've taken the lead. It's the fourth quarter. This is done. I'm going to go study. But instead, they just kept fighting, and they managed to win in a walk-off field goal. I mean, A&M, which it blew my mind. I didn't realize that Jimbo, like, I know there's the old storyline of like, hey, Nick Saban, his old coaches never beat him, that type of thing. I didn't realize they literally had never beat him before.
Never. Never. 0-25? Is that what it was?
Yeah, something like that. And they just had to put Mark D'Antonio in that graphic.
Yeah, that hurt. We didn't have to do that.
But credit to Jimbo. Also, Jimbo, like, How long does the protege label stick? Because I feel like he was his coordinator like 12 years ago. Like, he coached at Florida State, won a national championship there, and is now somewhere else. Like, how long is he just like, he's just a young pup?
I will say Saban's always your daddy. Like, you'd have to beat him convincingly a handful of times before you can drop it. And more.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, that's fair. But I'm just wondering how long, like, the term, like, the intern term applies, you know?
Yeah. I will tell you, Jimbo, got a life contract, man. Like, he's there.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
If you want it. I truly cannot believe that A&M won. I'm truly in shock. Not that Bama was – it's Bama. And Texas A&M, this quarterback, put up 7 points, I think 10 points against Colorado. Coming in,
looked completely
lost
and utterly inept against Colorado, like inept. And they've lost since then too, twice. They were 3-2 coming into this game.
I mean,
they had no real ability. They there was no reason to expect them to compete in this game, let alone win.
I know. Incredible.
Pretty wild. And man, what that does for the college football playoff. Like, listen, it's still Bama. They're still, in the driver's seat, maybe not the driver's seat, but they're still absolutely have a chance to win this, the whole thing. And I think we're still all sort of like expecting it, but now they have to do it. You know what I mean? Like now they have to win out.
Oh yeah.
They can't lose any more games. And I'll be honest, Georgia looks pretty darn good. Like Georgia looks every bit of what you sort of expected Bama to look like. I'll be honest.
We're down to one good team, Austin.
I know. I guess if we're just going to not be hypocrites, I have to take the title away from Bama. They are no longer a good team. Look,
I'm sorry. You can't lose to Calzada. You can't.
I agree.
You're not good if you do that. Can they become good again? Absolutely. But we got to take the title. You're not good.
There's only one good team, and I know we'll save the Big Ten team that's ranked number 2 in the country currently, Iowa, for when we make it to the Big Ten. But there's clearly only one good team right now, and it's Georgia. But man, do they look good.
So this game, I don't know if it mattered, but it was a lot of fun. Arkansas headed to Ole Miss. Ole Miss wins 52-51 on a failed 2-point conversion from the Razorbacks with no time left. It was a wild one. Almost 1,300 total yards in this game. 5 players had either 100-plus rushing yards or receiving yards. It was out of control and is exactly what you'd expect from a Big 12 game, not SEC we play defense game.
I heard somebody describe it as like football in 2032. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds about right to me, to be honest with you. I love the decision by Sam Pittman to go for it on 4th down or on the 2-point conversion at the end of the game. It had nothing to do with the fact that I had Arkansas +5.5 in this one. but I did. I just loved the decision making. And seriously, like why not? Right. Like, just go for it. I thought I loved the balls of it all. And like, credit to both of these teams. Like, they both have had tough, humbling losses to the Bamas and Georgias of the world lately. So good for them both for bouncing back. And I think you've got two pretty darn good teams here. How they finish is remains to be seen, but looking pretty good.
Yeah, Lane Kiffin turned that thing around pretty quickly, huh? So Oklahoma, Texas, Red River Shootout.
Oh, man.
Texas gets up by 18. And I was like, Austin last week was telling me maybe Texas is a little less fraudulent than Oklahoma. And I was like, you know what? I guess he was right. And I changed the channel. I came back. Spencer Rattler, preseason Heisman favorite, Vegas's favorite, benched, down 18. The backup, Caleb Williams, comes in, wins the game. Oklahoma 55, Texas 48, in one of the most Texas games that you could have ever seen.
An awesome play to end the game too. The walk-off, like triple option, like crazy handoff look. Just a like that, that's one where it's not trouble with the snap, but it's in that rivalry, that loss is going to get remembered prominently for, it's going to get brought up a lot, to put it that way. But yeah, man, Rattler, maybe letting the Netflix hype get a little too into our brains, because he has been bad this year. And Caleb Williams is pretty darn good. I just, it's, yeah. It remains unfair that yeah, Oklahoma just gets five. Listen, even if Rattler isn't this great player, the fact of the matter is they just keep churning out five-star quarterbacks, and it just doesn't seem like they should be allowed to do that.
I mean, I don't know. This rivalry, you could argue this is the best rivalry in college football.
I mean, it's certainly one of the more – it's certainly right now one of the most fun, if not the most fun. Even though it ends with Oklahoma winning every single year and breaking Texas's heart, it's still really fun because the scores have been outrageous. Like the last few years, it's been like in the 50s to something in the 40s, like every single time.
I can't believe, if you haven't watched the video, Oklahoma has a running play with 10 seconds left on their own 35 or on Texas's 35. Now they're trying to get in field goal range, obviously, but like. And it works to perfection, and he scores. Like, I can't imagine losing a walk-off like that in a rivalry.
Oh my god,
couldn't be me, couldn't be my team.
Nope, absolutely not.
Wake Forest, number 19, quietly also undefeated. Imagine if they had All-American running back defeating Syracuse 40-37. What if I told you that Wake Forest could legitimately be a playoff team?
I'd have to kill you.
I'm just saying, one.
So you continue the rest of this sentence at your own peril.
Okay, let's just start. Let's start with, what if Kenneth Walker was on their team?
Yeah. Whoa.
They might. Yeah, actually,
they've got to be a little upset about that. I mean, if there are in fact Wake Forest fans that care, which again, you show me one, and then I'll believe that it exists.
Sure.
They've got to be pretty upset.
Yeah, I mean. They're 6-0. Okay.
I mean, they lost to Michigan State in a bowl game, yep. Which Kenneth Walker played in.
Correct.
Then MSU comes and steals him away 2 years later, just in time for him to be really, really ridiculously good.
I mean, I don't know. They play at Clemson, but who knows, man? I'm just saying the ACC is so bad that
it's really bad.
Pitt's their best team, maybe? Question mark? And they lost to Michigan.
I'll say this. I know you're asking about the playoff and all this stuff. I think it's a very, very real world, maybe even the likely world at this point, that it's two Big Ten teams and two SEC teams.
Absolutely.
Like I don't think and I think the ramifications that are really interesting, because what if, you know, the Big Ten, you know, they've talked about doing this expansion of the playoff and all this stuff. What if the Big Ten's like, you know, we got two teams in the playoff. This isn't so bad. And they just stop supporting it.
You're right. You are so right. It could get bad for the expansion, but not my problem if my team's in it. Georgia heads to Auburn and looks all the bit of the best team in the country, beating them 34-10. I'm surprised Auburn scored 10 points. And Auburn really picked Bo Nix over Malik Willis at Liberty.
Buddy, that's one that would keep me up at night if I was an Auburn fan, because Malik Willis is probably the guy. And again, as someone who supports, unfortunately, a professional football team that badly needs a quarterback, Malik Willis is the one I want if I'm drafting any of the quarterbacks this year, none of which I'm terribly impressed by. Malik Willis is the home run, like the grand slam type of option of these quarterbacks. And like, he's just such a perfect Auburn quarterback too. It doesn't make any sense. Like, his skill set couldn't be better for what they need. It just has to suck, especially not just to not keep him. Like, if the quarterback you kept was good, maybe it'd be different, but Bo Nix is bad. Bo Nix has always been bad. I think we all got drunk when he beat Oregon and we haven't allowed ourselves to come down from that high. It's like you had a beer in a foreign country one time. And when it was fresh, you were like, my God, this is the greatest beer I've ever had in my life. And then you buy it at the store and you're like, well, this is really awful. Maybe it's because maybe it was so good because I was in a foreign country and I was having so much fun and I was X, Y, and Z. And now instead you realize you're just drinking rainwater.
It's vibes of Adrian Martinez over Joe Burrow.
Oh gosh.
Not quite that bad, but pretty bad.
That's pretty bad though.
And then to wrap it up, Boise State went to BYU and ended BYU's playoff.
Good
chances. 26-17, the Broncos take down the Cougars. And as you mentioned, with the two Big Ten, potentially two SEC teams, realistically, there are only a handful, like I would say 16 teams that are in contention for the playoff now. And that's being generous to Coastal Carolina.
I was going to say, like, I don't know where the bottom eight are coming from.
Well, they're all one loss teams that could win their conference. Unlikely, but yeah, we'll cover that in a little bit in a game I'm going to call Contender or Pretender and put you on the spot for.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, got surprises for you. Big Ten
plan stuff.
Yeah, Big Ten results. Maryland went to Ohio State, and shame on you, listener. Shame on me. Shame on everybody. Maryland is Maryland. It is. Ohio State is Ohio State. 66-17. I mean, come on, everybody. We're better than this. To even question that, we knew this was going to be bad, but holistic. Yeah. Bigger, higher 30,000 feet point of view. This is Ohio State's conference, man. We just play in it until further notice.
It is. It is. I agree. I feel sad that I agree, but I do agree. Yeah. There's really no way around it. Like, it's still a great team. I think the larger point isn't necessarily about my takeaway from this was not Ohio State. My takeaway from this is that if you believe in Maryland, I just feel for you. Like, uh-huh. I actually am reaching the end of my pity rope, though. Like, I can only, like, you watch somebody do the wrong thing for so long and not expect, like, the definition of insanity is, like, doing the same thing without and expecting a change in the result. I mean, dude, it's Maryland. I have to give them credit, too, man. The ability to perform the early season whoop is at Maryland followed by
hard.
Just like hysterically large loss amount, like hysterically large margin losses is pretty funny. And really just gotta be hard to do.
It is. It's very difficult and it's impressive and they should be commended for doing it. But again, they do it every year. And what are we doing? We're like, oh, they had a nice little win there. Maybe this is different.
They got a Tagovailoa.
Yeah. I mean, what are we doing? Like, we have to stop this nonsense. And if Ohio State loses a game, which happens rarely, are we going to really say their season's lost? No. They still have the best quarterback, who's a freshman, by the way, the best quarterback in the conference. He averages 340 yards a game, 18 touchdowns to three picks, 10.8 yards per attempt. I mean, oh my. He's throwing over two out of three passes are complete. Like, this dude,
jeez.
I mean, for everything that Peyton Thorne is doing under the radar, this kid, I would say, is equally as impressive to me, or more so than Peyton Thorne, which is hard
for me. Well, I don't disagree with you at all. And I also think it's more impressive, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And it's more, I don't know about more impressive, because he is surrounded by ridiculous talent. Right. I think it's more under the radar. I think people just stopped talking about them. Like, they just sort of forgot. Like, and now we're going to get to the point where they're going to play Penn State in 2 weeks or whatever, 3 weeks. You know, I don't know who they have before that. But, like, as soon as they get out there and perform against one of these good Big Ten teams, people are like, oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. This is a phenomenal program.
They have a bye, and then they're going to go play at Indiana, and which is
that'll go well.
A way different game than we thought it would be at the beginning of the year, right? And Penn State at Nebraska, Purdue, Michigan State at Michigan. I think you're going to start – the engine's revving up. You saw Rutgers. You saw the what they did at against Maryland. They get a bye. You'll see what they're going to do against Indiana. Yeah, Penn State at home. I mean, if that goes south for Penn State really badly, the rest of the conference, what's the point?
That's right. Well, we can talk about Penn State.
Let's do that.
Yeah, I got to say, so Penn State, just to recap the result, goes on the road, loses to Iowa in the 3-4 matchup. Penn State is screwed if Sean Clifford isn't healthy. I gotta give Sean Clifford more credit. I have never really taken him seriously as like a good quarterback.
Right.
But he at least gives them a chance. Their backup looked just so unprepared for that moment. Just like was not able to live. It was hard to watch. And again, credit to Iowa. Like Iowa showed themselves to be a team that's mentally tough. They hung in there despite really looking very bad in the first half.
Yeah.
For the most part, created the turnovers that they've been creating all season, and ultimately winning a game and being ranked number two in the country. Now, you know, I'll say two things. Penn State's defense is for real. It's a really talented defense. Yep. That defense is good enough to hang with any offense in the Big Ten. Yeah, I think Ohio State included. Certainly Michigan included. Certainly, I think Michigan State included. They're good enough to cause problems for anybody, especially that front seven. It's full of big-time athletes. But they are so screwed if Sean Clifford's not back. They don't matter. So what you were saying about if Ohio State beats Penn State, if they beat them without Sean Clifford, that proves nothing to me.
Yeah.
But if Sean Clifford's back and they win that game and he's 100%, then yeah, that's a major stake in the ground. Iowa at number two, fans, all I'll say, frisky Iowa is beyond back, but the other shoe is going to drop. And I've said this a couple times this year, I think already. When it does, it is going to be hysterical. This team, all they've done is create turnovers. I think they're now like plus 18 or 20 in turnover margin this year. That is, you talk about the term unsustainable. That is maybe the least sustainable like thing you can do in football. It's just always win their turnover margin. Like, again, they've got ball hawks. They obviously have good players on that side of the ball, but like you're simply not going to do that every game, especially as your caliber of competition increases. And they've got the only thing that's good news for them is that they don't really play good teams on that side of the conference this year. So just enjoy number two. I think they are potentially the fifth best team in the conference, and they're number two in the country right now. So just enjoy it if you're an Iowa fan.
Here's the problem for Iowa. Their offense is very mid, and is their
super
defense,
mid.
Their defense is, I will categorize them as good. They're good. There are very few units that are good in the country. They are good. And I don't say that lightly. The amount of disrespect Iowa had by, they could have run the ball trying to get a first down and ending the game. Okay. I was shocked.
Oh my God. Yeah.
They took knees to give the ball back, which in my head is insane because we've seen trouble with the snap. Why even do that? Right. Is it what they had so little, little respect for Taquan Roberson, who is, by the way, high school teammates with Jahan Dotson. They had so little respect for him that they punted and gave him the ball back with plenty of time. 39 seconds. Not plenty of time, but not like 3 seconds.
Not none.
And obviously he did nothing, but I've never seen anything like that. I've never seen anyone victory formation to give the ball back. Have you?
No. I think the Iowa, that was like peak punt, though.
Oh,
like,
God.
We literally think the only way we can win this game is by punting the ball. And that's awesome. That was heartwarming for me personally. But Yeah, I couldn't believe it when I was watching it. And I'm like, dude, Kirk Ferentz, it's not like you're new to this. You've been here since time began. Like, and you're telling me that you think this is the best way to handle it? It was a stunning display of disrespect and just stupid. Like, you're Iowa. The only thing you do more that is more natural to you than punting is running the ball. Like, with your borderline All-American running back, Tyler Goodson, like, run the ball. Just run the ball.
Well, yeah.
If you respect him so little, then you don't mind giving him the ball on whatever it would have been, exactly. Like the 30-yard line. Like, yeah. Who cares?
So odd. And, like, why even – I know their quarterback's terrible. Their backup. I get it. But Jahan Dotson still returns punts. Like, why even let him get on the field? I don't know. It was weird. Whatever. It's hard to question a 6-0 team. That was odd. And I think the watch out for Iowa, like you mentioned, is – 45 rushes for 110 yards.
Oof.
100, and then from Iowa's quarterback you could just put Iowa quarterback, not Spencer Petras. Iowa quarterback goes for 195 yards, 2 touchdowns and a pick. Like, of course, right?
Yeah.
So it's just nothing to write home about, just like in 2015.
Well, Iowa is a very, they are benefiting from the early season polls. And I'm not, and again, this is not to throw stones here. MSU certainly is doing that as well, with the, you know, the win over Miami probably holding more water than it should on paper at this point in time. But I mean, listen, who are their big wins over? Their big wins, Penn State's a great win, don't get me wrong, but it's Penn State with knocking their starting quarterback out. It's Wisconsin, who looks awful. And it's Iowa State, who is not good either. So I think I expect Iowa to drop a one of these dumb games, like a Minnesota or a Purdue, or just something where they play an offense that doesn't make really stupid mistakes and hits the explosive plays rather than the turnovers. It's inevitable.
I'm going to quick correct you. They didn't beat they only beat Iowa State and Indiana, not Wisconsin.
Oh, see?
Yeah. I mean,
they smoked them. Yeah, early in the season.
34-6. Hey,
team is red. I shouldn't be penalized for forgetting that.
They're probably going to run off a bunch of games. But as I mentioned, we're highly critical of anyone that is nearing hashtag good territory. It's just what comes with it. Just comes with it. Another unit I'm close to calling hashtag good is Wisconsin's defense.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Not quite there, but they beat Illinois 24-0. This was a Paul Chryst save your job game, in my opinion. Like, if he loses this game, I don't know, man. Now, to be fair, he did the exact thing you need to do and held Illinois to 93 total yards.
Oof.
It was bad, very bad. And then Wisconsin ran for a very Wisconsin-like 391 yards of rushing. But it's Graham Mertz, 10 of 19, 100 yards and a pick.
Graham Mertz stinks. He stinks. He is the ultimate cautionary tale when it comes to, you want to watch the stars. That's fine. They're fun. But, like, he is the cautionary tale of all cautionary tales, because he was ranked this 5-star guy and he is stinky.
Are you sitting down for this? Because
I am. I'm always sitting.
Graham Mertz was the best quarterback in the stadium. Brandon Peters went 3 for 7 for 12 yards, and Artur Sitkowski went 8 for 27 and 55 yards.
See, here's the thing, John. I was told Brandon Peters was really good. I'm merely repeating what I had been told roughly 2 years ago, was it? Yeah. Boy. So.
Yeah, never a good situation. To round it out, speaking of Brandon Peters, his former team, Michigan, went into Lincoln, Nebraska, coming out victorious 32-29. It was a great game. And just great like game. Nebraska did hard against Michigan State, they did it again against Michigan. And it can't be a surprise when it's a Scott Frost team. It's what they do.
Dude, it must be absolutely infuriating. Like, I would hate Scott Frost with my entire heart if I was a Nebraska fan. Like, if for everything he gave you as a player, I would hate him equally as much in the opposite way as a coach. This team is not bad. They are not a bad team. it is a, I would argue, a very talented team. A very talented team. They are one of the most poorly coached football teams, period, that I've ever watched. They, every time there's a critical moment, they make the wrong decision. Adrian Martinez letting the ball get stripped on that first down run with like 4 minutes left is inexcusable. This guy's not a true freshman. This guy is a third-year starter. They had a horrible pass interference down on the goal line right before, right at the very end of the game that set Michigan up for that easy field goal. Like, they had them on the ropes. I when I was watching this game, I didn't think for a second that, like, oh, one of these teams is a top 10 team and the other is this bottom feeder. They were peers. They were equals in this game. And, yeah, you know, credit to Michigan. They didn't blink when the big plays needed to be made and when they played relatively clean football. Nebraska they have shot themselves in the foot, the neck, and the face all year. Like, they took the sawed-off shotgun and have just turned it around and let the chopper sing, because it is shocking what they do to themselves on a weekly basis. Because realistically, like, and I'm not no troll, no, I'm not, you know, they should have absolutely beaten Michigan State. They should have absolutely won this game against Michigan. And then they should have absolutely beat Oklahoma. We should be sitting here talking about, at worst, what's their other loss? I'm trying to even remember. Was it Ohio State?
Illinois.
Oh, Jesus Christ. They absolutely. So this is what I'm saying. We could just as easily be talking about a 7-0. Or 6-0. Well, no, 7-0, because they played week zero. 7-0 Nebraska team. And Scott Frost would be the savior. And it's not like they're going up against like superiorly talented teams. They're just shooting themselves every single week. To me, that's not a problem with recruiting. He's doing a great job recruiting. He's doing a horrible job coaching, because well-coached players don't make these mistakes.
It's alarming. But it's also not my problem, so I will laugh and enjoy it from afar. Man, I will say this. Michigan and Michigan State looking fairly evenly matched. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
Austin, are you – go ahead.
No, I'll wait till we talk about their next game.
Okay. Upcoming national games. Let's play that contender or pretender game. Oklahoma State, undefeated. Undefeated, heads to Texas. Oklahoma State, contender or pretender?
It's Oklahoma State. I feel like we talked about this.
We did.
It's pretender. It's pretender. Okay. I don't even care if they win this game. They're not even the second. They're the second best team that wears the color orange in their own conference. That's what else? What else? Next, please.
They'll be fighting for that right.
Exactly.
Okay. Kentucky, number 11, Kentucky. At number one, Georgia. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't expect Kentucky to win this game. But if Kentucky were to not get destroyed, how would you feel about Kentucky?
I'm impressed. I'm already impressed. I mean, Kentucky deserves a little bit more credit than I think they get on a national scale.
I agree.
Like, they are consistently now, for the last several years, in games, winning games against big, really top quality SEC opponents. I mean, they beat LSU this week, kind of handily. I think they are just – Mark Stoops has done a wonderful job of coaching them. I'm kind of surprised nobody's come calling for him yet, to be honest with you. I think he gets underappreciated as a head coach. And man, are Penn State fans wishing they still had Will Levis back there. Oh boy.
Oh boy. That's a great
call. Yeah, I wouldn't call them contender, but I would say that they deserve shine. It's a good program they have down there.
Kentucky's staring 9-3 right in the eyes. And I think that's incredible. Much like Michigan State is feeling right now. For different reasons, it's incredible. But yeah, I mean, but hey, at the same time, we're writing this off as a loss for Kentucky. You got to play the game. So,
no.
Okay, here's one. UCF travels to Cincinnati. Is Cincinnati a contender or a pretender?
if we're approaching this as contender for a playoff spot, yes, Cincinnati is 100% a contender, in my opinion.
So, and then you have to ask yourself the question, do you really feel that confident about the good teams that Cincinnati couldn't compete with them?
No, I think the only teams that Cincinnati would like really, I don't know that they're hanging in there with, are the super duper talented, kind of like your Bamas, your Georgias, your Ohio States, those type of teams. I think anybody under that tier, which again, if we're talking about the third and fourth playoff spot, is a lot of teams.
Yeah.
I don't see any reason why they're not right in that conversation, man. They've done nothing to prove that they shouldn't be. Now I will say, if they go and play Bama, they're going to get beat by 1,000 points, or Georgia, in my opinion. But, you know, I kind of hope that they, as long as it's not at Michigan State's expense, which is an insane sentence to say, I hope they get a realistic shot. And again, this is one of those where it's like, if they don't get in now, when it's never happening.
Well, and this is why it's big, everybody, is take it from a larger viewpoint. If Cincinnati were to make the playoff this year, that changes college football as we know it, period. Mm-hmm. That's never happened. And then it kind of changes the complexion of expansion or not expansion. Like this Cincinnati's mm-hmm. hopes and dreams, you could argue will change the trajectory of college football. I'm serious.
Yeah, I don't think it's really that hyperbolic to say. Like it really does. It brings up so many different conversations. And honestly, it gets them, I think Cincinnati becomes a program that any of these conferences that are expanding mm-hmm. are chasing after. And Luke Fickell either realizes, holy shit, I have a great program, why would I ever leave? Or he becomes the single hottest name on the coaching free agency.
Right. That's market. Right. Yeah, we'll see how Cincinnati does in the Big 12 once they get there, but they're after a great start. And keep an eye on down the season. They'll host undefeated SMU, which will be a de facto playoff chance for a playoff game. And then one final game I want you to keep an eye on. San Diego State, number 24th, heads to San Jose State. Normally not a game that you'd think about considering, but I want you to know one thing. San Diego State is undefeated. They are coached by a man named Brady Hoke. And
that's awesome. I didn't realize that.
I just want to throw out a scenario into the universe that if San Diego State were to win out, 538.com has a 9% chance that they'd go to the playoff if they were to go undefeated. If San Diego State and Brady Hoke went to the playoff before Jim Harbaugh in Michigan, I might lose my mind laughing.
I would never be the same. I would simply never be the same. I would laugh.
Yeah.
I may never stop laughing.
We are officially on Aztec Watch on the only podcast.
We are all Aztecs.
Okay. Let's take a quick run around the Big Ten here. This Saturday, Nebraska heads to Minnesota. Minnesota just lost Trey Potts, their second running back, behind Muhammad Ibrahim. And it's really tough. Nebraska, like we said, bad team, but they're good enough that they should beat bad teams. And I don't know what Minnesota is, because they certainly can't turn to Tanner Morgan. So
no,
this looks like a really, really perfect 11 a.m. ESPN2 game, to be honest. No one should have to watch this.
I agree. I'm going to go ahead and give Nebraska more credit than they deserve. I would fully expect them to win this game.
For sure. Speaking of games no one should have to watch, Rutgers plays at Northwestern, which is a pick'em on Big Ten Network. And tell you what, I'll just let you guys know what happened next week.
Yeah, I don't think this should be a pick'em either. I think Rutgers is, again, after having watched both of these games being played, I think Rutgers is probably a significantly better team than Northwestern. They're certainly more talented.
I'd agree. I'd agree. That's why I went and hammered Rutgers. Who knows what Vegas is seeing. Purdue travels to Iowa. I don't know if I'm going to throw this as an OAP game because I don't necessarily respect Purdue, but they do put up a lot of passing yards. This will be the best passing attack that Iowa will have seen. I think they're ready for it. But if David Bell plays, which I expect him to, this has some emotional letdown opportunity for Iowa. They're lucky that it's an afternoon game, though, not an 11 a.m. kick. Then I would have had officially put them on OAP alert.
Yeah, I don't, man, every game for me with Iowa, I could see anything happening. Like, in all likelihood, they're probably going to cause turnovers and do what they've done all season and beat a team they should beat in Purdue. But they're also now, like, every time they play one of these teams, like, all the teams in their division are so bad that they're all looking at this like, okay, we've got a chance to take down the number two team in the country. Like, all of a sudden that bullseye on your back is really, really big. And you've got a lot of teams, coaches that might be coaching for their jobs, teams that are extra motivated to say, all right, we're going to go in and play. Like, the moral of the story is bullseye is real big. And we saw that, you know, there are areas where this team is simply not your typical number two team in the country. So it's going to be every game is going to be a half OAP for me with Iowa from here on out.
You're right. That's an interesting point, though, you make. For Purdue, it's a season saver. Iowa's next game after that is going to be after an idle week is at Wisconsin. It's a season saver for Wisconsin. It's a season saver for Northwestern. Season saver for Minnesota. Everyone, include, and then you get to Nebraska at the end of the year. At Nebraska, do you feel great about that? I mean,
not at all.
Everyone is on season saver alert, and Iowa's probably the better team because the Big Ten West is so mid. But to your point, this is it. Like, you look at everyone's remaining schedule, and that's the game because a lot of them aren't going to be bowling. So,
yeah, can you handle it?
Exactly. Final game, Army. Heads to Madison to take on Wisconsin in the night game. The Troops and the Badgers over under is set at 40.5, Austin.
Yikes.
How do you feel about that?
I think it'd be very disrespectful of Wisconsin to win this game.
40.5 is
40.5 feels like I might actually take the under.
26-15 final is what
this is going to be a hard game to watch. I'll be honest with you. Like, these are some offenses that if you loved football in 1964, buddy, I have a tremendous game for you to watch.
Dude, it's going to be bad. Maybe so bad that you should watch. That's all I'll say. A lot of teams are idle this week: Michigan, Penn State, Ohio State, Maryland, and Illinois. So there's really no Big Ten game of the week. But we do have Michigan State at Indiana, which at the beginning of the year felt a lot shakier than maybe it does now. And I want to shout out to Zanjo, a.k.a. at GoMSUButtBoy69, who preemptively sent me a DM about why Indiana stinks. And I really appreciate that because we didn't even get to put the call out. He was all over it. He said, preemptive why your team sucks for Indiana, an assortment of people to be associated with their school. Dan Dakich, Bobby Knight, Jared Fogle, the dude's brother from Last Chance U who murdered someone.
Oh my God.
Didn't know that. Also, their coach got beat by Ohio State last year, threw a temper tantrum when Ohio State went to Indianapolis over them, and took their Big Ten logo off their jerseys, only to turn around and get hammered by a sub-500 team in their bowl game. Also, Mel Tucker has more wins over ranked teams at MSU last year than this coach did in his entire career at Indiana. Pretty damning stuff.
All just facts, by the way. None of these things are opinion at all.
Nope.
I think one important thing to note is that in all likelihood, Michael Penix will not be playing in this game.
Yep.
And I think because he injured his shoulder and it was out indefinitely. He's only missed one game. Typically indefinitely means a lot more than that. So I'm harboring a guess here that, in fact, he will not be playing. And that's couldn't be a bigger deal I know he didn't exactly come out and light the world on fire early on in this season, but we did see that the 2 years previous to this one were what I said about Indiana was that this is a guy, this is a talent, this is a dynamic type of player that they do not typically have.
Right.
Michael Penix was an X factor. And when a program like Indiana or really any program gets an X factor like that, it can take you to places you've never been. And I think that's basically what Michael Penix was more or less able to do for Indiana. Now, not having him or having him be not good, which is what it was early on in this season, it totally changes the tenor of who you are as a team. It changes the way you can approach every single game. It changes your entire offensive game plan. It changes the way that teams prepare for you. And now you can't make up for some of those systemic or talent-based warts that you have on your roster. Again, when you're at a program that's at where Indiana's at, that's going to exist. It exists in Michigan State. It exists in a lot of almost every program. But the point is, you came into this year thinking, oh man, this is this big, awesome team. They're going to have a chance to play. How good is Iowa? They played them at the beginning of the year, and you know Penix is going to be able to set them apart and all this stuff. And now here we sit with them sitting at 2-3. The three good teams, well, good relative term, the three ranked teams they've played have beaten them by quite a bit. They almost lost to Western Kentucky. And they've just looked kind of like the Indiana of old. Mm-hmm. And as we go into this week, that changes the tenor of how I think Michigan State will approach this game. And I think the way that I think of last year or that, you know, I think everybody had a little too much dip on the chip with Indiana. So, again, coming into this year, I know I was very nervous about this game, but without Michael Penix, it's just a kind of a different tone.
So the great news for Michigan State is that you are unable to look past this game. Correct. Simply because you lost 24-0 last year. Zero points, shut out, physically dominated by Indiana. We watched Indiana pass Michigan State on the Big Ten tier list when this game happened. And Michigan State ran for 60 total yards on 24 attempts. They threw three picks. It was a disaster. And like, You just aren't allowed to take anything for granted, regardless of how Indiana's roster looks this year, because of what they did to you last year. So much like the Rutgers game where they had seven turnovers and lost that game.
Right.
You don't get to look past them. You're not good enough. They have a winning streak on you. You know, and until further notice, you need your full attention. And, you know, they do have two stud receivers. Peyton Hendershot and Ty Freifogel are very nice wide receivers. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem for them is I don't know if Jack Tuttle, he's never had a meaningful snap that I'm aware of. And he's a career backup to Michael Penix. And in his limited game time, he played a little bit when Penix was hurt. I'm sorry, last year. I misspoke when Penix did get hurt at the end of last year. And by the way, I believe Michael Penix has been played 4 years and has the previous three seasons, he has his season ended with an injury. This could be the fourth.
Yeah. Not great.
I just feel terrible for him, but you like to think he's going to have drinks and food and a job paid for just because of what he did to Penn State. So
yeah, you know. I would hope so. Certainly a job at a car dealership. If not,
that's right. He's good. But yeah, I think the good news is, you know, you got to feel okay about the Achilles heel. Like, you know, we still don't know a lot about this pat. We keep saying, is the passing defense really as bad as it is? You know, they give up a lot of yards. Well, Jack Tuttle doesn't really have, I mean, you're going to be asking a lot of him to win this game, because I don't see all of a sudden Indiana's 100 in the nation in rushing offense, all of a sudden figuring it out against Michigan State's rush defense, which is 35th in the country. So, I mean,
yeah. I mean, this one to me, if I'm looking for take, well, first of all, just to put a very blanket statement, Michigan State should win this game. End of story. It doesn't matter what you're going on the road. You are officially the better team in this game. They're without their starting quarterback, like you said. You should win this game. You should go into a bye week before you play Michigan And that's what should happen. Now, obviously, we know things can go haywire. Things can happen. So you don't want to take that for granted. But when I'm looking at what I want to see MSU do in this game, it's first of all, not only just simply win the game, it's to just play smarter than they played a week ago. The numbers are going to cause you to go back and look at that game, kind of like we were talking about, and think, holy smokes, one of five teams to ever have the 300-yard passer, you know, 200-yard rusher and 200-yard receiver all in the same game. Like, that's insane.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. But you only gave up 13 points. But again, just kind of made some boneheaded plays. And against maybe, you know, better teams. I don't know that Indiana is necessarily the better team. That's going to cost you, especially if now you're in this conversation of, hey, the playoff is actually a conversation we are a part of. You're not going to get there making some of the missteps that you made last week. So I would like to see a little bit better coaching in critical situations, especially with clock management. That to me was not great. And I think we've seen a couple examples of that, to be honest with you, this year, where we've justifiably all kind of scratched our heads, but I'd like to see that. I would like to see the defense, to your point, and is the point you were probably about to make, but like Jack Tuttle is not Michael Penix. He's not going to light the world on fire. I want to see this passing defense like come to play. I want to see a shutdown performance, more or less. I want to see them play the way that defensive front has played offensively. I want them to keep doing what they're doing. There's no reason why MSU shouldn't be able to go out and exert their will in this game.
So we talked about Iowa has a bunch of season, you know, changers for the teams they're playing against. That game is a season saver. This mm-hmm. would be that for Indiana right now.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so they're circling on this because, I mean, realistically, they have Ohio State after us. You got to say to yourself, it's a home game. Can we pull something silly out, right? Like, are we really that much worse outside of the quarterback position? I don't know the answer to that because they're looking at our defense right now statistically, and they're saying there was ever a time to ease in a new quarterback. This is it.
Yeah, right? True.
And so, you know, Tuttle, you know, his only game where he was asked to do much of anything was at Wisconsin, a win where he went 13-22 and two touchdowns against an away game at Wisconsin, and then had a kind of a mid game against on the bowl game against Ole Miss, 26-45, zero touchdowns and a pick. They are going to need him to win the game, and I think, you know, this is for me. We can wipe away the narrative of, is this defense good? Is it not good? You know, are the stats lying? Good being a relative term, but you know, are they really as bad as the stats say? If Indiana, who right now is 99th in scoring offense, 107th in total offense, 100th in rushing offense, and 79th in passing offense, if they put up the same type of numbers or near that you've seen from other teams, you have a very big problem on your hands as a Michigan State team and fan. Now, because this is the warts game. Are you good?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you not? And it's going to become crystal clear against a team like Indiana. And for what it's worth, Indiana's defense is not awful. They're above average. Above average passing defense, above average rushing defense, above average total defense. The problem is they're giving up 28.2 points a game. That's 89th in the nation. It's because they've had given up so many pick sixes. That's a big part of it. So that's a little misleading on the scoring defense. They're a better defense, better than average defense. Are they as good as Nebraska's? I don't know that answer. Probably not. But, I mean, you got to show up on offense, too. And as I said, we'll learn everything you need to learn about this Michigan State's defense in this game. Because if it goes south, man, I don't know.
Yeah, then you get some real worries. I will say one thing I'm looking for, too, is a good second half performance.
Yeah. Third quarter is
Yeah, it's been the soft spot. I mean, MSU has come out guns a-blazing, it seems like, just about every week. Early on, big plays, flea flickers, all that stuff, which once again we saw work brilliantly this week. And it just, you know, you're going to have to hang in there and play a complete game against these really good teams. It's not going to work, kind of to your same point, when you get into the games against the Michigans, against the Penn States, against the Ohio States. If you want any chance of winning those games against objectively some pretty darn talented and again, we throw the term good around relatively, but like not bad teams, you're gonna have to be able to play a full game. And I don't think we've necessarily seen that in four quarters for MSU just yet. So that is something I personally will be really hoping to see this week.
Absolutely. They're probably going to script Tuttle's first drive as I would, and just see where they net out. And to your point, it's got to be the halftime adjustments. Like Rutgers went scoreless in the second half. We have to remember that. But I think
offensively is really what I'm talking about. It's not defensively. Defensively, I think they actually get better as the game goes on.
Yep.
But because they win those battles in the front. But offensively, they've just had some really long extended cold streaks, and I'd like to see that change.
Yeah, absolutely. So as we mentioned, MSU 3.5-point favorite opened. It's up to about 4.5 points, and you know, that's pretty tight. I just want to throw on one thing before we wrap up. I've needed about 3 games to get data enough to make these projections, Austin, but I have one for you.
All right.
I want to go on record. MSU versus Nebraska, the projection was 24.1 to 23.2. The final is 23 to 20. Against Rutgers, the projection was 30.4 to 22.5. MSU won 31 to 13. Couldn't do Western Kentucky because we didn't have enough data. Western Kentucky had only played 2 games against FBS teams. So this week, we have MSU 33.1, Indiana 15.9. I feel okay about the cover. I do. And I rarely, rarely am the optimist around here. But I do feel like I need to go on record with the method.
I think the Kirby method is well thought out. I don't know what factors into it, but I like it. And I like your optimism. I'm pretty sure that's what I'm gonna put in this weekend. I just, again, to put kind of final thoughts to it, MSU's a better team in this game. I know that's what I've been saying this whole time, but like they should win this game. This would qualify as a really bad loss, in my opinion, if they were to lose. And quite honestly, I don't mind them scuffling a little bit. Like, you know, they're going to have a bye week to work on stuff ahead of Michigan. So I think, honestly, I don't want a flawless performance because you want to be able to ride these guys for 2 weeks ahead of Michigan and really be ready for what should be. I don't know. I mean, for all Miami's flaws, they are still a really talented team. There's a really poorly coached team. With Michigan, you're going to get a similar amount of sheer talent and a much better coached product. So they don't want to get caught looking ahead. I actually think that the bye week could not be better timed for those reasons, but, they should win this game, and they should go to 7-0, which is an absolutely insane thing to say. But just because expectations change, just because maybe you're not going to be, you know, expectations are a little bit different, certainly, than they were at the beginning of the year. It doesn't mean you can't still enjoy this ride, because it's been a while since we've had something like this. So don't lose the forest for the trees.
That's right. You expect a similar type of game as the Rutgers game, is what I'll point out. They're a similar type of talent at this point. So enjoy it. I mean, enjoy these parts. Enjoy the fact that you're bowl eligible. Here's the last thing I'll leave you with. MSU Twitter melting down when they were down 7-0 at Rutgers. I'm melting down. Absolute fire storm. And the team won 31-13. Everyone, breathe. You got to breathe. Everybody,
breathe. We're going to be okay.
And remind me of that when I'm losing my mind when MSU is down 3-0 at the start of the second quarter. That's all I ask is you remind me.
You have that promise from me. I will remind you.
All right.
All right, everybody. As always, thanks for sticking with us. For John, this has been Austin, and we'll catch you next week.
See you.